It's my job to raise awareness about the elephants that we have in our care, who they are, where they're from, what their lives are like, and on a broader spectrum to raise awareness about the complex needs of elephants in captivity and the crisis facing elephants in the wild. Now, what that means is, on a more technical level, is we design programs, curriculum for classrooms, outreach opportunities, different ways and materials to get the messaging out there. And we're also actually starting a new nationwide volunteer program called our LA Ambassador Program, where we train community volunteers to be our outreach representatives in their home community, whether that's Knoxville or Seattle or Des Moines, Iowa, or wherever. We want to get the information out there in every possible way.
It's the largest elephant sanctuary in the country. How many sanctuaries are there for elephants?
It's a good question. There are lots of facilities that are sanctuaries by name that have a sanctuary in the title. Our facility is a little bit different in that our philosophy of sanctuary is that we try to be a safe haven, again, a natural habitat refuge that's dedicated to the well-being of the elephants, first and foremost. There are other facilities where they have elephants, but their definition of sanctuary is a little bit different than ours. There are places where you can learn how to be an elephant trainer, where you can do elephant rides, where there's all sorts of different ways that you can interact, which we don't do at our facility because, again, our whole focus is on creating the what we think is the happiest and healthiest life for the elephants. And all of our elephants are retired from zoos and circuses, so they've spent much of their lives either as educational ambassadors, zoos, or as performers, as entertainers in the circus. And so our facility is the place where they don't have to do that anymore. It's where they spend out their golden years. And for some of our elephants, the golden years started somewhat early. We have elephants that are, you know, our founding elephant was actually 21 when she first came to the sanctuary, and our youngest elephant now is 32. So our 32-year-old elephant, for example, still has a long life ahead of her, hopefully, and she'll be able to spend it in sanctuary doing, for the most part, whatever she pleases. So that's a long way to say there aren't very many facilities that do what we do. There is another organization in California called the Performing Animal Welfare Society, and they have a sanctuary for lots of different animals, including elephants that are from the performing industry. So we do work with them. They have a facility for bull elephants there. We've done some staff training and exchanges with them, so we work closely with them whenever we can.
I was going to ask you about that because your facility, of course, has only females.
Mm-hmm. We are a female-only facility, yeah. For one reason, we started off as a home for one female Asian elephant. That worked out well. And then we got another female Asian elephant, and that worked out well. We got another female Asian elephant, and we began to grow this herd of Asian elephants. In the wild, Asian and African elephants, adult males and females, don't really live in the same herd except for very specific purposes at very specific times of the year, but they're not together all the time. So because we had a growing Asian herd of female elephants, to introduce a male into that herd would be unnatural and potentially unsafe. And we're not a breeding facility, and so we didn't want to go through that process.
Are most of them confiscated?
We've never paid for an elephant. All the elephants that are at our facility have either been given to us by their owners. We have elephants that have been given to us by the zoo. We have elephants that have been given to us by private owners, by circus owners. We do have several elephants that came to us as a result of the USDA's involvement in a few different cases where they either had confiscated elephants or they'd been pretty clear about, you know, asking someone to get their elephants to us. So each elephant acquisition, as we call it, is a very unique process. There's no by the number way that an elephant comes to the elephant sanctuary.
You have both Asian and African elephants,
we do.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How many of each do you have?
Right now, we have 11 Asian elephants and 2 African elephants.
So the Asian elephants, especially mm-hmm. since it's the larger group, do they kind of hang out in a large herd or do they split up into groups?
That's a really good question. In the wild, elephants grow up in a herd, and your herd is your extended family unit. When male elephants, when bull elephants, when they reach maturity, they leave the bigger herd. They'll spend their calfhood or their childhood with their mother, their siblings, the older females, and then when they reach maturity, they have to leave the herd. And we know that young male elephants will form what are called bachelor herds, and they're kind of their own separate herd. And then as they get a little bit older, they can become more solitary. But the larger elephant herds, the herds where the young are raised, are headed by a matriarch and all adult females, and then young and juvenile males and females. And the females will spend their entire lives within the same herd. Our facility is unique in that we have 11 Asian elephants that for the most part, have never really been in a herd like that. A lot of them have just met each other as adults, which you wouldn't see in the wild. You know, an adult elephant in the wild doesn't all of a sudden just meet a new stranger elephant and they become buddies. So our herd is very atypical, and they function in their own way. So what we see is sometimes the larger herd will, you know, be hanging out together, like you said. What we often see, though, is that they'll split off into smaller, you know, pairs or trios. And all of our elephants have a best friend or a couple of best friends, and we'll see them together. And then we have other elephants that like to spend time alone. We have an elephant named Shirley. She's our oldest elephant. She's also the third oldest elephant in North America. She's 65. She's very independent. She'll spend days by herself, and then she'll come back to hang out with Tara or one of our other elephants. So it's a very unique situation. We see a lot of, you know, what you might, wild behavior, I guess you could call it. Some things that you would also see in the wild with elephants that have never been in captivity, but then there are also, you know, behaviors and things we see that seems to be, you know, purely a result of their very, very unique upbringing. All of our elephants were captured in the wild when they were very young. And then they all made their way to the United States to be in the exotic animal trade, whether that was, again, zoos, circuses. Tara, our founding elephant, she actually got her start in the U.S. as sort of a mascot for an auto parts store in California.
Are the African and Asian elephants kept separate?
They are kept separate, and we keep them separately because nature keeps them separately. And they're very, very different. They look different, they act different, they socialize differently. So we're very fortunate that we have the space to keep them separate. And the two African elephants, they're a pair, you know, a herd of two, I guess you could say. By giving them the separate space, we allow them the opportunity to just be, to be their own selves. What we've seen in the past, there have been lots of instances when you have commingled African and Asian elephants, and a lot of times that can result in miscommunications between the two and some kind of stressful situations. So keeping the two apart just allows them to be their own normal, majestic selves without trying to conform to another elephant culture, I guess would be the best way that I can describe it.
What are some of those differences?
Well, the physical differences are African elephants are a little bit taller generally. They're very tall at the head and shoulders, and then their back dips down a little bit, and then they're really tall at their hips and their rear end area again. Whereas Asian elephants have a much more rounded appearance. We have some of our Asian elephants who look like, you know, a football that you stuck a head onto. Mm-hmm. African elephants, males and females, have tusks that you hear so much about. Whereas Asian female elephants don't really have tusks, and so they're kind of easy to identify at a glance. Behaviorally, African elephants are much more demonstrative, might be a good word, touchy-feely or rambunctious with one another. If you were to put African and Asian elephants together, the Asian elephants might think that the African elephants played a little bit too rough, whereas the African elephants, to them, it's totally normal. They might think that the Asian elephants were being, you know, weird or standoffish because they weren't engaging in the same social behavior.
Now, can they see one another from their separate enclosures?
They can't physically see one another, but we're learning now, and there's a lot of research that's bearing out that elephants can communicate over pretty vast distances, a lot farther than we previously thought. Right. And we believe that they're doing that by using a very low registry of noises, similar to what, you know, whales do. We think that low registry, although we can't hear it, they can hear it. And we also, there's research now that supports that elephants can actually pick up the vibrations in the ground through their feet. And so they can pick up the vibrations that way. So we think that the elephants at our sanctuary, although they cannot see each other, we think they're probably well aware that there are other elephants nearby. And as far as that goes, who knows what they might be talking about that we can't hear. Maybe they've got it all figured out and they haven't shared with us yet.
As far as education and outreach mm-hmm. go, I read recently that there were close to something like 30,000 elephants killed last year for mm-hmm. ivory.
Yeah.
Does that come up in your outreach?
It does. The numbers are always pretty depressing. We think that around the turn of the 20th century, there were maybe 10 million elephants in Africa. Now there's probably less than 500,000. In southeastern Asia, the habitat of the Asian elephant has been reduced dramatically. There's around 40,000 Asian elephants left in the wild. The Asian elephant is listed as endangered. The African elephant is listed as vulnerable. We also know now that there's a new elephant, the African forest elephant, that lives in the jungles of central equatorial Africa. And we didn't even know that elephant existed until fairly recently. And one of the first things we learned about it is how quickly they're being killed off for their ivory because they're in the jungle. They're very hard to find. They're very hard to count. And we still don't have a really good idea of how many there were, there are, and how many we're losing on any given day. Shockingly enough, in 2014, the price of ivory, the material that comes from elephant tusks, is as expensive as it's ever been. Ivory smuggling can still be a very lucrative business. So in our education programs, what we try to point out is that there is still a global market for ivory. There has traditionally been a market for ivory here in the United States. President Obama just recently signed a new measure that greatly restricted the commerce of antique ivory in the U.S., which is a big step. So our education programs are just to inform everyone that ivory equals dead elephants. There's really not any other way around it. And then the other big reason for the loss of elephant life is the loss of habitat. Elephants are very mobile creatures in the wild. They walk miles, sometimes, you know, maybe even 40 plus miles in search of food and water on any given day. When we start building parking lots and railroads and interstates and highways and towns spring up and farms and plantations, all that alters their ability to move in a natural way. That affects their success in breeding. It affects their success in foraging. And there are lots of instances when an elephant wanders into someone's farm, and it doesn't take two or three full-grown elephants very long to completely demolish a year's worth of harvest. And so there's a lot of genuine hard feelings between farmers and elephants in many parts of the world. What we do want to do is we want everybody to be asking the question and thinking about it. The way that we do that is by sharing the story of our 13 elephants, who still, even though they are retired, they're still ambassadors for their species.
You mentioned earlier that there are behaviors that mm-hmm. are indicative of captivity mm-hmm. and others that are natural. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the differences in some of those?
I'll speak mostly from the elephants that we have in our care. If you look at lots of animals in captivity, there's lots of instances where you see, you know, what's called stereotypic behavior, where, you know, animals, some animals will, they'll rock, they'll sway, they'll stand still, they'll do lots of things that you don't see animals in the wild do necessarily. All of our elephants, again, come to us from in zoos, circuses. Some of them were certainly loved and very well cared for. In some instances, we have reason to believe that they weren't that well cared for at all. Billy was one of our circus elephants that came to us, and Billy is very, very wary of human interaction. It took her a couple years at the sanctuary before she would actually engage with any of her caregivers for any sort of training, for anything. When she actually came to us, she had a chain around her right front ankle. She had been kind of deemed a problem elephant by her former owner and had been kept in a barn, shackled, for lack of a better word, for a couple of years before she could come and be with us. So when she came to us, she had this chain around her leg, and we couldn't figure out how to get it off because Billy wouldn't let anyone get close enough to her, and no one was really in that big of a hurry to try. So finally, after about 5 years of Billy walking around with that chain on her leg, we'd worked with her, we'd given her treats, we'd established a little bit of a rapport between her and her caregivers, and she finally let someone get close enough through the protected contact bars with bolt cutters to clip her chain off. And so that was a big step for Billy, but even now to this day, still out of all of our elephants, Billy is still an elephant that seems to show a lot of signs of distrust towards humans. At our facility, we have some elephants that seem to enjoy, or maybe even in some cases, seek out human attention and affection. We have other elephants that would just as soon not interact with people, and then we have elephants that are in the middle of the road. Obviously, in the wild, in a perfect scenario and setting, elephants would never really interact with humans at all. So all of that is behavior that they've either learned or been trained or been taught. So it's all very unique. Some of the natural behaviors that I mentioned that we see is the elephants we do have that forage. Our oldest elephant, Shirley, she's 65. We know that she was captured in the wild. She's from Sumatra, Indonesia. We know that she was captured when she was about 6 years old, which is very, very old for an elephant to be taken from the wild. A six-year-old elephant's a big animal. I don't know what the story was behind the decision to take her as a six-year-old elephant, but it's very unusual. After she spent decades performing in circuses and decades in a zoo, she came to the sanctuary, and Shirley is one of our most quote-unquote normalized elephants. She's an elephant that will graze and forage on her own. She's an elephant that's very adept at finding food. She's one of our most mobile elephants. Even though she's our oldest, she covers a lot of ground on any given day. And again, we don't know for sure, but we think that's because she had those 6 years in the wild with the herd. You can remember things from when you were 6 years old, you know, and that those are formative years for us. And we know that elephants are incredibly intelligent and their brains are bigger than ours. And we believe they have incredible capacity for memory. And so those 6 years for Shirley may have been enough to imprint on her what it's like to be a wild elephant. And it's wonderful to think that, you know, 50 some odd years later, when she was in a more natural setting, she was able to kind of reach back and pull all that back up to the front. And now maybe she's living more as a, not as a totally wild elephant, obviously, but as a little bit wilder than she's been in the past.
Do you actively seek to bring more elephants in, or do you have people who just contact you?
We're aware of every elephant in captivity in North America. We're interested parties just like everyone else is. Having said that, the first step in that elephant acquisition process is the elephant owners decide that they want to find a new home for their elephant, and then hopefully they contact us. We don't necessarily go out and recruit elephants. We don't go out and try to convince people that they should send elephants to the elephant sanctuary. We just want everyone to know that we are a resource, and if you're looking to find another place for your elephant, we hope that they think of us.
Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.